right, it's Dave Platter back with you on 720 WGN. So as a kid, Chicago's very own Gary Sinise was more interested in sports and rock and roll than reading or schoolwork. But when he auditioned for a school production of West Side Story, he found his purpose, or so it seemed. Within a few years, Gary and a handful of friends created what became one of the most exciting and important new theater companies in America. Steppenwolf Theater Company launched a series of groundbreaking productions before he took the role that would change his life in unforeseeable ways. Lieutenant Dan in the Academy Award-winning film Forrest Gump. The military community's embrace of the character of the disabled veteran was matched only by the depth of Gary's realization that America's defenders had not received all the honor, respect, and gratitude their sacrifice deserved. While starring in hits like Apollo 13, Truman, CSI New York, and Criminal Minds Beyond Borders, and winning an Emmy, Golden Globe Award, Screen Actors Guild Awards, and nominated for an Oscar, Gary has worked tirelessly on behalf of those who serve this country. He has entertained more than 500,000 troops around the world, eventually founding the Gary Sinise Foundation, with a mission to serve and honor America's defenders, veterans, first responders, or families, and those in need. Now, Gary's new book is called Grateful American, and he's joining us this morning. Welcome back to WGN, Gary.
Well, thanks for having me. Good to be back.
Absolutely. You know, I have to say, I just saw this amazing video that was released thanking you for your tireless work for our veterans, from the likes of four-star General Robert Rand, General Colin Powell, Tom Hanks, Robert De Niro, Ron Howard. The list goes on, and an honor that is truly deserved. It is.
They sprung that video on me yesterday, and I didn't know what was going on. My assistant, I walked in, we were leaving. We were about to leave and get in the car with all our bags and everything, and they said, sit down, and you know, I'm like, well, don't we have to go? Let's go. they put me in front of a computer and turned on this video, and all of a sudden, Jay Leno is just saying stuff to me, and Ron Howard, and all these people, these friends of mine, and people I don't even know, first responders and military folks, and all of that. And I was just in shock. I was stunned by it. Very emotional and moved by it.
That's great.
Overwhelmed, just overwhelmed by the kindness and, you know, that people would take the time to do that.
So well deserved. I mean, so well deserved, Gary, honestly.
Well, I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I have to say, the new book isn't your typical celebrity look at me book, because I read a lot of these. I found it to be a true reflection, and I know you're a Chicago guy, so I know that helps because you're a grounded guy. It found to be a true reflection of gratitude and really a reflection on the ability that you've had in your life to give back, and that's really critical.
Well, yeah. I mean, I didn't know what the what the title was going to be. I wasn't even sure what the book was going to end up being. I knew I wanted to explore certain things, you know, like
right.
Like all the service work with our military. I've been to so many places and met so many people and gone to the war zones and entertained, you know, the troops and all these different things that I've been involved with over the years. So there's an accumulation of information and stories and, you know, inspirational people and everything that
sure.
That I've had over the years that I thought, well, let's for sure explore some of that. But then I decided to go back and kind of track how did we get to that point.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, what were the steps along the way that have added up to this service life, and so it became a true sort of autobiography that goes back even before I'm born and analyzes and explores some of my family history in Chicago and some of the things. You know, I was born on the South Side. I'm born in Blue Island. I lived in Harvey for the first 9 or 10 years of my life, then
sure.
Moved up to the northern suburbs, lived in Highland Park, Glen Ellen, back to Highland Park where I went to high school and fell into acting. And there's a lot of steps along the way that have sort of added to this thing. And it really became clear to me that the themes that were popping out of the book as I really reread it and rewrote it were gratitude, appreciation, some of the blessings that I've had, some of the mistakes I've made, and how they have even given me a knowledge that I wouldn't have had if I hadn't made those mistakes, and then this singular focus on myself, you know, with the acting career and Steppenwolf and the things we were doing there, to this broader focus of service to others that, you know, is depicted in the last couple of chapters of the story. So it was an interesting, you know, exploration, I think. I took about 12 to 14 months to work on it.
I bet you did. I feel like I was on this journey with you. No, that's why I really enjoyed the book. I just kind of felt like I was on this ride with you, you know?
Well, I'm glad you... I worked hard to kind of get my own voice in there and to tell it the way I would kind of say it.
Well, serving your country runs in your family, going back to World War One. Your grandfather served in France, you know, transported wounded from the battlefield. Uncles that served in World War II. Your father served during the Korean War in the Navy. Did any of them at that time when you were younger or even as you were older sit down with you and really talk about those days with you?
No, not when I was younger. I so wish that I was old enough at the time that my grandfather was alive.
Yeah.
That I would have been interested in hearing about what he did in World War One, but you know he never talked about any of that when I was a kid. No,
yeah.
He was a railroad guy. He came home from the war and went to work on the railroad on the South Side, the Indiana Harbor Belt, and worked the railroad for 40 years. And you know his three sons all served. Two in World War II, and my dad served in the Navy during Korea. But they never, you know, by the time I was old enough for them to, you know, to absorb any of the things that they would say, they were well beyond their service years, and they never talked about it. It was only later on, you know, after I really started focusing on military service that, you know, I started asking questions. My uncle Jerry, who was the middle brother of the three brothers, and my dad's, you know, he's older than my dad. He passed away in 1996, and he lived in Texas. He moved to Texas years ago, so I didn't get to know my uncle Jerry or what he did. Thankfully, though, he was a writer, and he wrote about his military service. So
right.
What I know about his military service is what from what he wrote about it. But I did get to spend a good amount of time with my Uncle Jack, who passed away at 90 years old. But the last 12, 15 years of his life, I took him to different military events and took him to the National Memorial Day concert in D.C. And he was a navigator on a B-17 over Europe during the war, so I arranged for him to get on a B-17 and fly around.
Yeah, that's
you know,
cool.
Years
yeah,
ago. And,
yeah.
You know, I did spend a lot of good time, and he talked about his war days, only up to a certain point. He saw a
right.
lot of bad stuff up in the air, and a lot of airplanes go down, and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
so he saw a lot of bad stuff.
Yeah, that generation really didn't talk about it that much. I mean, you really had to pull it out of somebody, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I, you know, I was able to take him to the National World War II Museum in New Orleans, and have him recorded on video, and so I,
that's
you know,
great.
After he passed away, they gave me a copy of his video of him talking about his war years, and it was really very moving, and, you know, so I did get to spend some time with him. It was really the Vietnam veterans on my wife's side of the family that kind of gave me an education about Vietnam and what it was like for them to come home from war to a divided nation that really kind of got me started in supporting our veterans.
Yeah, so there was a Vietnam veteran, and in this part of the book, it was just very moving about being at the Hilton the summer after Forrest Gump was released. You were at the Hilton on Michigan Avenue, ballroom filled with hundreds of disabled veterans and their family members. You know, you said you witnessed a sea of men and women, men with scars and prosthetics and burn marks and crutches and wheelchairs. And they were clapping and cheering wildly because of the role you played of Lieutenant Dan. And there was a Vietnam veteran who gave you that award and said that your performance brought back that awareness of lifelong sacrifice. But you said they said back to you, and that really stopped you and said, gosh, what happened in between there that we have to actually bring it back, appreciating our veterans?
Yeah, I thought that was kind of an odd thing. You know, it made me think quite a bit that, you know, our veterans should always be celebrated and supported and feel appreciated. And, you know, we take our freedom and those who provide it for granted. We do, because we go by, unless we have a personal family member or somebody who's serving, or, you know, best friends or somebody who we're personally connected to, you know, so much of the country is kind of disconnected to that. Yet there are people out there every single day that are sacrificing, and families that are sacrificing. And, you know, September 11th really rocked my world and changed the course of my life. And when we started deploying our service members to Afghanistan and Iraq, I thought I have to be in this with them, and I want them to know that that what they're doing is appreciated. So that's why I went on this mission.
Yeah, I kind of feel like you're the our generation's Bob Hope, so to speak. You know, with, you know, right after 9/11, contacting the USO wanting to go on tour, and he was so visible during World War II in Korea and Vietnam, of being the guy that went out there and wasn't afraid to spend Christmas away from home and spend times with our troops. And I know that, you know, that was certainly an inspiration for you back then. But, you know, you go back in this book and you talk about, really, as you said, going back to your earliest years, and your dad, after the war, going into the movie business. He was an award-winning editor. And when you were a kid, you know, you're thinking about what you want to do with your life. And obviously, you know, you became an actor and an advocate for our veterans. But at the time, you know, you were a big Cubs fan. You thought music or sports was going to be part of your life. Ron Santo was on the top of your list, watching him on WGN, right?
Oh, yeah. No question about that.
Yeah.
I was born on the South Side, so I lived in Harvey until maybe 1963 or something. But we had this little black and white television back then.
Sure.
And, you know, the Cubs were on WGN. That was Jack Brickhouse, during the 60s.
Sure.
And as a little kid, I would watch the Cubs on that little black and white television.
Of course.
So people have asked me why I'm not White Sox fan.
Yeah.
And it was because I was watching the Cubs on GN all the time.
Right. Legendary. And Jack, and I, you know, when I think back and look at Jack, I mean, he was on for 40 years, and he did everything. He did football. He did baseball. I mean, that was the most visible guy way before Harry Carey that made an impact on Chicago sports. And I don't know if you read this, but this past week, Cubs mentioned that they're going to be building their own network, like New York and Los Angeles. So they're the marquee sports network. It's the last season of the Cubs on GN. They've been there for 71 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They're going to a full pay channel. Yep.
Their own thing. Wow.
I'm bummed. It's tradition, yeah, right?
Sure. Holy cow. Hey.
That's right.
Oh, my goodness.
But think about this. 69. Like, you know, you're a young kid. Yeah. You're there through the 69 Cubs. You're also around for Woodstock. So there's music and sports, and you're thinking, this is going to be somewhere I'm going to go. You audition for a play in high school. It's West Side Story. And then college really wasn't on your radar as much anymore, was it?
Oh, no. I had such trouble academically in high school that I couldn't conceive of going to college. At one point, I thought, well, maybe I'll go to some place like Juilliard, where the actors go. Or
sure.
But that was only a momentary thing. I just couldn't. Going to college just didn't seem like the right thing for me because, you know, I had such trouble graduating from high school. I was really a troubled high school kid and went through a lot of tough stuff. And so when I graduated, and I graduated from high school late because I had been such a screw-up in high school that I didn't have enough credits to graduate with my class. And I talk about this in the book. So I had to go back to high school, and I just felt pretty bad, and like I had failed. And, you know, it was finding the acting department and the theater department and stumbling into plays and doing plays that really made my high school days mean something. And obviously, you know, that's where I started acting. I was able to start a theater after that and go into this and make a living at it. And it all started, you know, because I was kind of an aimless kid in high school looking for something to hang on to. And I was thankful that this drama teacher recognized me and told me to come and audition for a play, and I did, and I got in it.
Got in it, and then really were part of the team that put together the Steppenwolf. And you talk about you know, how veterans have weaved into your life pretty early on, even before some of this, even before Forrest Gump. You know, you did Tracers, and you knew there was a suicide bomber that in the early 80s that killed 220 Marines, sailors, soldiers. And that kind of hits you in a different way. And you started watching, you know, like Vietnam, a television history on PBS, and started kind of ingraining yourself for these roles, but it touched you in a certain way.
Oh, no question. No question about that. It was the Vietnam veterans on my wife's side of the family, in her side of the family, that started me thinking about what the Vietnam veteran must have experienced when going off to war and then coming home to a nation that had turned its back on them, and how difficult that was. And so as artistic director of Steppenwolf at that time, back in the early 80s, I wanted to find a piece of material to direct that was based on, you know, the Vietnam experience. Right. And I found this play that was written by a group of Vietnam veterans, and they were performing it at the time. And I went to see it in Los Angeles, and I begged them to give me the rights to do it. And I take the time to talk about this in the book because it was so significant. You know, here I am right now, a full-on, full-time mission of service to our veterans, and the roots of that go back to my family members and the Vietnam veterans that I met in Chicago and the experiences that I had, working on this play about Vietnam, taking my cast to the VA in North Chicago to sit with a group of Vietnam veterans a few times and listen to them talk about their experiences. And here, these veterans were in there. They were in the hospital because they were going through terrible post-traumatic stress from Vietnam, but also from coming home from the war and having the country just spit on them.
Right. Yeah.
And here they are in the hospital, and they're I'm bringing my cast there, and I want my cast to listen to the guys talk about what it's like to have served in Vietnam and to be a Vietnam veteran, because they were going to have to play these guys. And that was that was galvanizing for me and the cast to sit there and listen to these veterans talk firsthand about their combat experiences and then coming home and facing a new war here at home with people that were treating them badly. So those early days working with Vietnam veterans in Chicago galvanized some things in me, and then I went off and played a Vietnam veteran in Forrest Gump, and then September 11th came along, and I knew where I needed to put my energy, and it was towards supporting the men and women who were deploying to Iraq and Afghanistan.
Sure. Sure. And no, I love the fact that, you know, just from a prep perspective for a play like that, and then also your love for veterans and your dedication to them, having your cast go through and experience it firsthand must have been amazing preparation and a different level of understanding.
Oh, yeah. No question. No. I think it was key to sit with the real deal and listen to them talk about it. And we also did some other things. I talk about the rehearsal of that play as important as the performance of that play, because getting ready for it was
highly emotional.
Very emotional. Very emotional. Yeah. And something, you know, I wanted us, you know, me included, to submerge ourselves in the Vietnam story and to learn as much about Vietnam as possible, to prepare to be soldiers. And, you know, I even set up, this is before that movie Platoon, where you mm-hmm. heard about, you know, Oliver Stone and Dale Dye, the technical advisor, taking the cast out and living out in the jungle and doing boot camp and all that stuff. Well, this was before Platoon. This was back in 1983, and right. I took my cast out into the woods to do a boot camp. And you know,
brilliant.
Of course, it was in the winter time when I did that. It was December, so we were at a closed down summer camp, and there was snow everywhere. And we're getting ready to do a play about the jungles of Vietnam, and here we are training out in the snow of Michigan. But
what a great way to do that, though.
You know what? It was more about the sequestered aspect of doing it. Somebody knew somebody who had a who was connected to a summer camp that was closed down, obviously, for the winter. But they let us use the cabins, and we went up there, and we were isolated at this summer camp, just me and my cast, for 4 or 5 days. And we just stayed up there and bonded as a cast in a way that, you know, we'd never experienced working on another play. And this was all done before we even read the play out loud and rehearsed the play. My cast, and I talk about it in the book, how important it was. They gave me 5 weeks for free, and they would just come after, you know, do their show up, and then we'd read, we'd watch movies about Vietnam. We'd do calisthenics. We'd live in the woods. I mean, we did all kinds of stuff to get ready to just perform that play. And by the time the cast performed it, they were submerged into the world of wanting to portray these Vietnam veterans honestly. And it began a relationship with veterans that Steppenwolf has had for years now. I wanted to bring veterans in for free and let them see the show. So we made Tuesday night available for veterans. And now every single play since 1984, we give veterans a free performance.
Yeah, that's great. That's absolutely fantastic.
You must be my FNGs.
Morning, sir!
Oh, get your hands down. Do not salute me. There are goddamn snipers all around this area who love to grease an officer. I'm Lieutenant Dan Taylor. Welcome to Fort Platoon. What's wrong with your lip?
I was born with big gums, sir.
Well, you better tuck that in. Gonna get that caught on a tripwire. Where are you boys from in the world?
Alabama, sir.
You twins?
No, we are not relations, sir.
Look, it's pretty basic here. You stick with me, you learn from the guys that have been in country a while, you'll be all right.
Gary, then you get the role of Forrest Gump, and I know you had an opportunity to be in a Disney movie, but I guess this happens with actors too. When you reflect upon the fact that you accept a movie role, you often have to choose and think deeply about if you've got a choice between two movies, what you want to do. And you got Walt Disney knocking at your door to do this, and then you have this opportunity where you get to play a veteran just after years after you did this play, right? I mean, that's the opportunity.
Yeah, it was. Along came Forrest Gump, you know, about 10 years after I did Tracers, the play about Vietnam in Chicago. And I actually got to now audition and play the Vietnam veteran. And it was interesting because I auditioned for it, and then I didn't hear anything. And I really wanted it, but I got to this place where I said, I better not think about it because I might not get it, and I don't want to get too depressed. So I'm going to go audition for other things. And so I did. I went and auditioned for like 3 or 4 other things, and it got down to the wire on 2 things that I didn't get. And then 1 I did get offered, and I got it, offered it almost at the same time that I got offered Forrest Gump. Wow. You know, and Forrest Gump came back around about 3 weeks after I auditioned for it and offered me the part. And so now I didn't have anything, and now all of a sudden I have 2 things.
Right?
I got to make a decision between a movie called Tall Tale that Disney was doing and Forrest Gump. And I very much wanted to play the Vietnam veteran. The Tall Tale movie, I would have played the father in a movie about a little boy, and the mother was going to be played by my wife, Moira.
Oh,
so
that's
I had
cool.
to turn down playing the father and working with my wife. And went to work with Tom Hanks and did Forrest Gump. But I think it was the right move.
Absolutely. Absolutely was. 10 years after 9/11, you created the Gary Sinise Foundation. You last year raised $35 million in 1 year alone. Among its programs, construction of special adapted smart homes for severely wounded veterans that are provided mortgage-free homes. You lead the Lieutenant Dan Band and touring hundreds of shows and concert stages and military bases and war zones. I mean, you're a guy that has really put his, you know, money where his mouth is, and gotten this done, and you're doing amazing, amazing things every day, man.
Well, thank you. I guess I was always the kind of guy that just takes action, you know, and maybe it's out of it came from an insecurity in some ways. Years and years ago, when I was a kid, I was always a little intimidated because academically, I just couldn't cut things. You know, I really struggled. If you look at my mom, saved all my report cards from kindergarten through high school, and if you look at them, it's like a D average. You know,
I don't mean to laugh, but yeah,
it really is. It's like a D average all the way from little kid to high school. But then I get into high school and I start taking all the theater classes, and all of a sudden I'm getting A's in all these theater classes. Yeah. So clearly you can just look at my report cards and figure out, like, okay, this kid found his thing, you know?
Sure.
He found his thing. In a way, I wanted to make up for that sort of insecurity about school and how I felt around the other students who were doing well and everything, and I would just kind of make stuff up and go do things.
Sure.
And like, I was the kid in the neighborhood who organized the baseball team or the baseball game, or I was the kid in the band as a sixth grader who figured out what songs we were going to play and organized, you know, working out to play at the local kids' party or whatever, you know, take the lead. And so when I had the opportunity to take over as artistic director of Steppenwolf and get that whole thing going, you know, it just, I was kind of, I don't know, there was something in me that was just like, well, if you can think about it, you can go do it.
Yeah.
And we live in a great country that allows us the opportunities. The opportunities are there if we want to work hard. Sometimes it's easier for other people to get there. And there are obstacles in front of everybody, and sometimes there are fewer obstacles in front of this guy than there are in front of that guy or whatever, but it doesn't mean that the opportunity isn't there and that you can't make something of it. And, you know, I certainly just look at Steppenwolf and, you know, some of these other things that I've been involved in. It didn't just happen. It was a lot of hard work and a lot of, sweat and tears and ups and downs. But, you know, you can do something if you really put your mind to it.
You quoted Ronald Reagan when he said, "Freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for, protected, and handed on for them to do the same." And those words have stuck for you, and you live by them.
Oh, no question. And that's absolutely true. And when you go to places around the world that really don't understand what freedom is, or they have people that are willing to fight to take your freedom away rather than hand it to you or protect it for you, then you value your freedom and those who provide it that much more. And I've been to places. There's a story in the book about some of my trips to Korea and going up to the DMZ and standing on the DMZ between North and South Korea and staring at a North Korean guard, staring them in the face. I mean, they'll come right down to the borderline and stare at you and take your picture.
Wow.
I've had that happen where the North Koreans are, there's a building when you stand on the border at the DMZ, there's a building in the distance that North Koreans are inside that building, and they're looking at you with binoculars and stuff. And sometimes there's somebody just standing outside the building. And sometimes they'll walk down the stairs and come all the way up to the borderline. And the border is just this little piece of concrete that goes, it's like this concrete line that's about 6 inches high. You can step right over it. And they'll come up to their side of that little concrete ridge, and you can go right up to the south, the Korean side, and stare at them in the face.
Wow.
And it's very bizarre. And they'll take your picture, And I've done that. And, you know, you're looking at somebody who is enslaved to the supreme leader.
Yeah.
They have no concept of what living in a free society is. They don't have the... But the people in the South that are on the South side of that little concrete line, they're free.
They get it.
They're free. Yeah. They can go wherever they want, do whatever they want. Their economy is about the 10th greatest in the world. You know, they've been able to enjoy freedoms that the people in the North just have never had. And you value your freedom a lot more when you are face-to-face.
Yeah.
With somebody who doesn't have it.
Well, we've just scratched the surface of this great book. It's called Grateful American. And by the way, you can see Gary right here in Chicago on Monday, February 18th, with fellow Steppenwolf co-founder Jeff Perry. Copy of the book is included in the ticket cost. The event will take place in Steppenwolf's Downstairs Theater, 1650 North Halsted, at 7. And for tickets, you can call Audience Services at 312-335-1650, or you can go to steppenwolf.org. I have to tell you, I really, truly enjoy the book. What a great conversation. And I so much, and so does millions of others, appreciate what you do for our veterans every day, Gary.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Congrats on the new book.
Thank you.
All right. Top stories are next on 720 WGN.